The RTE Rugby Podcast.
And you're very welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Hugh Call and Wes Liddy with you for the next half an hour or so. We're delighted to be joined in studio as well by James Downey to look ahead to the weekend that is to come. Munster against Toulouse in the Rugby Champions Cup and Leinster at home against Wasps as well. James, you're very welcome.
Cheers, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You went to Belvedere, right?
I did indeed, yeah.
So back-to-back Senior Cup titles. That's pretty good going.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, it's been a good start. And I think a couple of them played in some decent finals the last few years. But it's good to see the school winning some silverware and back to winning ways.
Yeah, what about your old haunt?
They're not even an A school anymore.
Really?
Forget about it.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. I just wanted to depress you.
I think they got into the first round of the Senior Cup this year, but that was it.
Yeah, well, I went to Monkstown as well, so I'm not going to be preaching about it in terms of skills rugby. Look, it's a busy weekend ahead and a brilliant weekend, I have to say. Like, I'm really looking forward to European rugby back, Irish teams back in, I suppose, with a real chance of progressing to the business end of this tournament. And it starts this weekend. I think last year almost feels like a bit of a blip. Is that fair to say?
I think in hindsight, looking back on it, maybe the fact, I suppose, with Leinster particularly, of so many at the World Cups, probably made it a particularly difficult season. It would seem that way now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant to have it. I know, like James, obviously you played the last time Munster and Toulouse played in the quarterfinal in 2014. And I suppose from the outside, there's so much kind of myth about these kind of games. But I mean, when you were preparing, what was it? You know, what was the vibe like? Was it a special occasion?
It's always a special occasion then and Tom. And, you know, I think especially these European nights, and I guess things might have pilted off a little bit recently, but I really think lately European rugby always brings out the best in Munster supporters and in the players as well, you know. And obviously things are actually going well for once now coming into it. They're going to be favourites again coming in, I think, and deservedly so. But yeah, look, special nights down there. It's an evening kickoff. I think it's a good time, 5:30. So it sets it up perfectly, really.
We're biased, obviously, but the competition needs the Irish teams to do well, I think. It just needs them because the Irish fans add something, the Irish teams add a certain something as well.
They're also the only supporters that will travel to away games in bulk, which is does add to the atmosphere in the knockout stages massively.
Yeah,
absolutely. But I think you look at some of those, like, people know of Claremont, people know of Thomen Park, people know of these stadiums and where you're playing. There's certain things, like if you mention Europe, your stadiums come into your head straight away. And it's always an Irish team, absolutely, you know. So it's essential that we're in this. Both for, like, you know, when the French teams are in it, there's such a drop in interest when it's just French teams. You know, there's a final on, I think it was it a couple of years ago, it was an all-French final in Dublin, and it was just no vibe,
very
no atmosphere.
Average.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And even thinking back to when Leinster had that reasonably good team, semi-finals, and they were beaten by Perpignan in Lansdowne Road. And then I think it was a Biarritz-Perpignan final in Dublin, and there was nobody at it and nobody really cared about it. The French don't prioritise it, though. The top 14 is their number one. And then after that, the Heineken Cup or the European Cup, they can take it or
leave
it.
That's it. And, well, we're the flip side, you know. It's like they're trying to change it, of course, with the new rules and the Pro 12 and stuff. But we used to prioritise European rugby. And in England, it's not like that. It's Premiership. It's the same. But yet, we'll give it a crack, like, you know. But it's all about Premiership. This is what we're looking for. You know that at the start of the year. Well,
what would be the perspective in a top English club, James, from your experience? Like, is Europe, was winning what was the Heineken Cup valued above a Premiership? Was it equal? Where did it rank?
I think it depends on the club. And so a Leicester or someone who has done well in Europe or done well in the Premiership, Europe's always a big thing. It's always a huge thing. Certain Northampton, when I was there, it certainly picked up in that way. But initially, it's league focus. Anything else is a bonus.
Wow.
You know, and it's because it's top six. Like, there's always a competition. Top four, semi-finals, and then top six for Europe.
Yeah.
There's always qualification for Europe before the Pro 12 brought it in.
Okay.
But you could in Ireland, you could rest those players. You know, you had that capability to throw out your kids every week. And it didn't. You could have come second last and you'd still be in European Cup, while in England you had to qualify for it.
I think that's a huge reason why maybe the French and the English perceive that the Irish clubs get an advantage in that way, because the Pro 12 has been perceived as being the weakest of the three leagues. Maybe that's starting to change now. The results this year, I think, in Europe in particular, the first two rounds, the Pro 12 teams outperformed the French and the English. But I think that was always the ambush of the Irish can afford to throw in whoever in their leagues. We have to put our best team out every week.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that you see the standard. People pay money as well to see, obviously you want to see some young up-and-coming players, but you also want to see the big dogs, you know, the lads that your Johnny Sexton's playing every week, okay, Zebra away and they mightn't play, or Zebra at home or something, and or Treviso, no disrespect to Italians, but regardless, you want to, you're paying money for a season ticket, you want to see...
Absolutely.
So certainly with the likes of the derbies at Christmas, I mean, you can't have it everywhere. We were given out that there wasn't full-strength teams playing there, so, you know, it's give and take, but I mean, you look at Toulouse this weekend, who of all French teams obviously have valued the tournament. But I mean, they're 9th or 10th in the top 14. They haven't failed to make the playoffs in the French League for 40 years.
Yeah.
Where's their heads at tomorrow?
And the way they're playing at the moment as well, they're 1-6. Like, you know, they've only won one the last six. And in the top 14, you're talking a good few of those games there too, where you have to win your home games, and yet they've lost them. So it's an interesting mindset that they're going to be coming over in, you know. And again, it's with the French teams, it's the first...
Yeah,
first
you kind of get the feeling they could be steamrollered.
Completely.
If Munster start well, the crowd get in behind them, maybe it turns out like it did the last time. But equally, they're dangerous until that happens with the quality of players they
have. Well, you know me, Wes, I'm not one to make, you know, brash predictions.
No,
I think Munster are going to win by 30 points. Honest to God, I think they're going to absolutely smash them out the gate. And for the reasons you just said, James, I don't know how interested Toulouse are going to be. Guino Vez was always the guy that had a huge focus on Europe, and he was almost bucking the trend in terms of French top 14 coaches. He's not there anymore. The coaching tickets that are there, as you said, they've done a kind of mixed job. And I just think Munster are going to be fitter than them, more up for it. Thomond Park, I think it'll be over by halftime.
I think that's like typical... I'm not a fan, actually. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Typical way a fan looks at it. But, I mean, that's kind of the worry, though. Like, I suppose the last time you were playing them, you know, maybe... Everyone wasn't over the moon with Rob Penny and the way the team were playing and things like that. And this, it was a bit of a reaction, I suppose, from the team and the supporters. Whereas now, you're almost like factoring in the unexpected as what's going to happen. Like, I just have a slight worry that, you know, everyone expects the crowd to do it for you, the turn up, everything to go right. You're kind of going, well, it could happen, but you know,
yeah.
I mean, would you have any fear, James, that? You know, in a season where obviously there was the events that happened with Axel and took a huge toll on everyone, I suppose, emotionally is more than anything. And then the main players had this huge high of beating the All Blacks and the follow-up game. Then a Six Nations campaign. With that kind of attritional way Munster are playing, would you have any fear that as it gets to the business end of the season that just fatigue is going to play a huge factor against them at some point?
Maybe so, a bit later in the season. But Europe... No, like I'd be on Hughes' side here. Like I'd be like 100%. I have no fear over this weekend. Obviously, I think you really have to shut the French down early in this. Like if they have a sniff, they'll play it a bit of jouet, you know, and throw it around. And but if you can stifle them, play cup rugby. Like you mentioned the game again, like with Rob Penny and the way we're playing, we kind of changed it that year when we came to cup and we brought it back to cup rugby. It's cup rugby, you know, it's knockout, and side to side wasn't going to work, so we kind of reverted to type a little bit, and it worked, you know. And it's, if you come out for those first 15-20 minutes, whatever it is, they do lose interest, and once mistakes start to appear, they throw it, and they look for someone to do something, while Munster will look to play within that unit and play as a team and play to structure. A hell of a lot more structure than the French do. If you can play them, they can't defend off after three or four phases because it's loose, you know. Like, but if we can get them in structure, they'll just end up all over the place. They normally do, like, you know. But
I was amazed at watching Toulouse at the sports ground earlier this season where they looked to be on top for the first 45, 50 minutes of the game, and Connacht just... they were fitter than them, they outplayed them, they moved them around the pitch, and Toulouse they've got these giant forwards, they've got pretty big backs as well, but they were out on their feet after 60 minutes, and Connacht just kept throwing it left, right, keeping the ball in hand, making them work, and the gap started to appear, and they just couldn't live with what Connacht were doing.
Yeah, I think it's the way they play it, a lot should be taken from it, and the way Rossi can bring in a game plan is to move them around, move their pack around, as you said, like some of their forwards. You've got Joe Decore, is a huge man, but when he was a catch, he was a hell of a lot slimmer even then.
Yeah,
and he's put on an awful lot of bulk, and he's lost an awful lot of that the offloads, the ability for him to get around, the mobility to get around the park. But now he's sluggish, they're scrum, they're set piece focused, so if we can push them around, we'll fatigue them, and then
they lose their shape.
And I think, again, reverting to a couple of years ago when we played them, it was when it came loose, we were under a bit of pressure, you know, when it became offloads and we were ahead and we kind of took our foot off the pedal a wee bit. It became dangerous and they had dangerous individuals, but you can stifle them as a team.
Okay, it's been a kind of a weird week for Munster in a couple of ways. The news that Donegal Ryan is leaving the province at the end of this season took an awful lot of people by surprise. There's a huge amount of debate about whether it's the right or wrong thing as far as the RFU and David Nussafour is concerned. And then equally, Razzy Erasmus kind of threw out in a press conference that actually he has a buyout clause in his contract, that he wants to stay in Munster. He does think he'll be here next year, but certainly he did kind of mention that and specifically mentioned it. So that got people thinking as well. Donegal Ryan case, first and foremost. I can't understand this one. 33 years of age, I know. And let's leave aside Jamie Heastermere because it's not relevant as far as I'm concerned. 33 years of age, he's first choice second row at the end of the Six Nations, and he's being allowed to leave at the end of this year in a World Cup cycle, midway through a World Cup cycle. What's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it's very bizarre. I'd love to see Donegal stay. He's one of those players that just puts everything in. Like, when he's out in the field, he leaves nothing to chance and he just leaves it all out there. Like we spoke before briefly about, like, I'd have him in the engine room every time, you know. He's just one of those players you rely on, and when he's not there, you miss him. I think before the Six Nations, if you said, oh, what second row would you have swapped if you had to swap it for someone come back, you wouldn't have dropped Evan, you know. A lot of people said, oh, but he's there for his line ace. But to let him go, which it's nearly what it is, you know, it's a release nearly, you know, and it's like, it's just a sad end for him that he's been there so long. And obviously, look, he's going to do great in France and stuff like that.
Take someone like Donegal Ryan. We know he's had a couple of injury issues over the last 3 or 4 years, but they've been small, niggly things as opposed to major, like, injuries that require surgery and stuff. So, like, fitness-wise at the moment, he said at the end of the Six Nations he's playing as good as he ever has. He hasn't got a huge amount of miles on the clock because when he was at Munster, obviously, there was Paulie, there was Donegal, O'Callaghan.
The first major European match I remember him being first choice for was when Raj got the drop goal after 40 phases or whatever against Northampton.
Right.
Like, generally before that, you'd any combination of Donegal, Paul, Mick O'Driscoll, and he played at six quite a bit even.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have huge miles on the clock.
And 33 years of age is actually prime territory.
Look, Martin Johnson was 33 when he lifted the World Cup. Paul O'Connell just gone was 35. Simon Shaw is 80. Like, who knows? Second row does seem to be the position you can do it in. And at 33, with that amount of miles on the clock, as well as he's playing, you'd imagine he's definitely good for another 2-year contract.
And explain to me how Joe Schmidt has him as his first choice second row 2 weeks ago, and today he's surplus to requirements. I don't understand this.
Nor I. I wish I had the answers to it. I'm sure he's scratching his head a bit as well, going, well, here I am. This is the best bargaining position I can be in. You know, this is, where else can I be? Like, what other front foot can I put forward? Like, this is, I'm number one choice.
I can't do anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
Have I offended somebody here? Is there something you're not telling? And the problem is, I suppose, you know, just that compounds this whole thing, is that there's no communication from Nussafour, from the IRFU, as to why, right? We're just sort of told he hasn't got a central contract. Therefore, the money on offer at Munster isn't matching what he was offered in Racing. He's a professional player.
Was anyone told that? Or is this just what's come out in the media?
Well,
no, there has been no official.
No, nothing official. It's my understanding that the money he's been offered for Racing is more than what Munster alone could have offered him. If it had been a central contract, it would have been made the difference. So,
The way it's even come out has been a bit strange. I mean, I saw a couple of arguments put forward that it was to do with timing, that, you know, these contracts might have been arranged 6 months ago and...
All right, they're locked in stone, aren't they?
At that time, he wasn't in the first three locks.
They're down in the cellar in a...
Seems, like, I agree, it seems insane that anyone could put that forward as the reason why he didn't get a contract. I mean, it's kind of propaganda,
especially if you're negotiating at the time, fair enough. But you can still, like, renegotiate again and
He's signed with Racing. I think he has a pre-contract signed. I don't know if the final contract is signed. Like, I'm sure they could have rang him up a week ago and offered him a central contract.
Yeah. This line as well, that, oh, he's always wanted to go to France, maybe it's his decision. It's not, like, it's not his decision. We know that, right? Off the record, it's not his decision to go to France when there's a World Cup in, what, a year and a half, 2 years' time? It just beggars belief for me. And, you know,
never been first choice at a World Cup.
The timing around Jamie Heaslip getting his contract as well, you know, the whole thing, just the more you think about it, the more frustrating it is. And if you're a Munster fan right now, you're kind of going, if you're Razzie Erasmus right now, you're going, hang on, one of my focal points here, one of my leaders is being taken away, because why? You guys won't give him a central contract, despite the fact that he's first choice in the Six Nations. If I'm Razzie Erasmus now, I'm kind of pulling my hair as well.
Yeah, and that's the, unfortunately, is there stuff going on that we don't know about behind closed doors? Is this the best ploy in the world by Dunica Ryan's agent that everyone's talking about it, and all of a sudden there's going to be marches and like get Dunica signed, you know? It's a strange one. It really is a strange one. And as I said again, it's for someone who's put so much in to one province, like into one team.
It makes a huge difference, though, if you think that by and large, to some percentage, the provinces are funded by the IRFU. Munster have either three or four players on central contracts next year. Keith Earl, Simon Zeebo, CJ Stanley, Conor Murray. Ulster have five, and Leinster have 10 or 12, I think. You know, that difference of eight players in your squad being entirely paid by the union versus you having to pay them. Now, I know Munster maybe haven't managed their finances the best in the past
and
number of years.
They have been bailed out by the IRFU.
They have, but I mean, eight players at 200 grand a pop is 1.6 million euros a year.
Yeah.
Now, that's a very crude calculation, obviously.
Sure.
But it's significant, like, so.
But it also means.
I can't imagine a coach would be very put out by it.
But it also means Munster have to recruit, right? They have to go and sign. Dave Foley's gone as well. They've got to sign two second rows now. What's that going to cost?
Well, Dave Foley's gone. Mark Chisholm never got to play much because of injury. He'll be gone at the end of the year. Paul has just gone.
Yeah.
Some of the guys they brought through, John Madigan, Sean McCarthy, very bad injury record already at this point. So, I mean,
Darren O'Shea is back as well.
Darren O'Shea is back, having left. But I mean, you wouldn't want Darren O'Shea, with the greatest respect, to maybe be going into this game this weekend in your first choice team, or you know what I mean. You would plan to have two internationals there, probably, in an ideal world. But it's like it goes from being a position of huge depth to a position of cupboard being like their first choice locks next year is probably Jean Kleyn and Billy Holland.
Yeah.
And what age is Billy? 32?
31, 32, yeah. And I mean, you know, he's a 6'4" second row too. You know, maybe you want a different kind of profile of player in there in an ideal world. Certainly as another option.
Yeah, 100%. Dynamics changed in that position. But it also goes back to when Munster had the majority of players in the Irish squad and on the central contracts, and to how much of an influence that has, that Leinster have so many players, that they have this money to purchase good quality players.
Exactly.
And as they do, while Munster, because the last few years have been a bit bare in things and success hasn't been there, that the effect of no player has been centrally contracted affects the province and affects the recruitment. Like even when Rog came off, when he retired, like, he was falling off a central contract. They wouldn't have been able to afford him, even if they wanted to keep him.
Yeah.
If he hadn't retired, same with Paulie. If Paulie was coming off a central contract, like, he's not going to be cheap, you know. And all of a sudden, you've never had to pay this bill, and all of a sudden, this bill's on your lap, and you're like, oh, okay, hang on, how are we going to deal with this?
A few years ago, like when before you came the same year as Casey, they went from having a European Cup winning team in 2008. Ruud Tupoki finished up early with injury, didn't play much his last season. Said, we need a 13. They went out and they got arguably the world's premier 13 in John de Villiers. Yeah. Now, he didn't maybe work out the way people wanted, whatever.
He wasn't bad, in fairness.
No, but, I mean, that's certainly not the case anymore. And they've gotten a lot of flack for it, and rightly so in some cases. But when you look at it in that light,
But if
you're losing that much money with the contracts you're picking up, what can you do, you know?
Are Joe Schmidt and David Nussafora, a team on these kind of things? Because obviously everything we hear has been done in the interest of the Irish setup, right? It's all about the Irish focus and the long-term interests of the Irish team. I can't imagine that Joe Schmidt, I mean, on the face of it, would be too happy about this. And if he kind of said, okay, fine, off you go, I sanction this, I'm kind of puzzled as well, because is there an obvious second row partnership now?
Unless they're taking a punt that within the next 2 years, one of Henderson, Delan, James Ryan, whoever, will pass Dunica out, and at which point we don't want to have our third or fourth choice lock on a central contract. But I mean, it's a big punt to
take. It's a roll of the dice, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a 2-year deal. I mean, think about it. That brings Dunica Ryan up to 35, brings him up to the World Cup. by which stage
you would think that's the natural move on point, yeah. Then yeah. Right, not now.
Bizarre one. I don't think we're going to.
And the Rassie stuff probably hasn't helped.
No.
In the week either.
Well, what's your gut feeling on that?
My gut feeling is he'd go.
But after this season,
why didn't he just say he wouldn't go? Yeah. Even if he was gone, why didn't he say he wouldn't go? Like, there's no point for you, the week of a big match, to just add to the, it was like getting out, to use an Eddie O'Sullivanism, it was getting out a can of gasoline and pouring it on the fire, you know? Say, I don't want to comment on speculation at this point. It seemed bizarre to be getting into talk of formal and informal chats, and they're my friends and I know them for
years. South African rugby is a disaster at the moment. Like, the national team are as bad as it has ever been. So they are desperate to get him back. He says he has a buyout clause. Now, if you look at Pat Lamb's situation in Connacht, obviously he gave notice for something between 6 and 9 months when he had to make that announcement to leave for Bristol.
I don't think they'd be bringing Rassie back on the kind of money that Bristol were offering, maybe.
No, but equally, he can give his notice and say, right, lads, I'm giving you 6 months' notice now. And Munster say, right, thanks very much, you can go at the end of the season. We need to get a new coach in place. They're not going to hold him over the summer, right?
And he misses a lot of the early Springbok camps for this season. If he's in Munster till the end of May. So maybe it's something like maybe he takes charge in September or ahead of the Northern Hemisphere tour next November or something. I don't know.
But
I think he goes at some point.
But if he does go, hypothetically speaking, he goes, Munster will want someone before pre-season, like to come in, meet the player, rather than coming in and going, okay, it's a bit late then you're behind the eight ball a little bit.
Exactly.
And technically, they're down a head coach already, which should be filled this summer in terms of Axel's position. And now maybe there's a whole structure to be looked at if he goes. Maybe Nina Barr, they seem to be a package deal. All of a sudden, that's 3 members of your coaching staff potentially gone.
If I was Bernard Jackman, I'd be getting my CV ready and throwing it down into Thomond Park. Right, we'll move on because time is a little bit against us. Like, it has been, as we say, a kind of a mixed week for Munster, and we're hoping that these off the pitch distractions won't take away from the performance, and it won't. Like, they're just too focused, they're too professional for that. But Leinster, everything seems to be going their way at the moment. The whole coaching ticket has been signed up again for another couple of years. Bar Jamie Heaslip and Rob Kearney being out, they've a pretty much fully fit squad to choose from. Yet there's a serious danger there with Wasps coming over. Dai Young is a brilliant coach. We know they love to score tries for fun. They have a brilliant back line. You know Wasps as well as anyone else. They obviously finished your career. So how do you see this one?
Yeah, I think it's going to be probably the best game of the weekend, to be honest. Like, it's Wasps back three, threats everywhere all over the park, really, you know, and they have a lot of boys involved in England now. That's the only thing I'd be kind of concerned about. They don't play with the team. I suppose some of the Leinster boys didn't play either, but a lot of the English players aren't involved. But yeah, I do think they'll be coming over. That Dai, being Welsh, kind of did look at Europe when I was there, did focus on Europe, wanted to push it, you know. I do think that they're really going to go for it. It's going to be a great game. Like, it's clashes everywhere, you know. There's one-to-ones everywhere that are going to be exciting. As I said again, the back line that Wasps have.
But you look at Cipriani, Jimmy Goppert, Christian Wade on the wing, Elliot Dady's in there.
Willie LaRue,
Kirtley Beale.
Leua, the centre, wing's great player as well. Like, they've loads of them.
Leinster's defence, you'd imagine, are going to have to be rock solid. If they allow Wasps to kind of throw that ball around as well.
Actually, for the first time I can nearly remember, you're nearly thinking a structured game suits Leinster.
Right. Now,
generally, you're kind of thinking, you know, if it goes fast and loose, they're pretty well equipped. But it seems, just raw pace, I guess, in that Wasp back
line. And your bench as well, you know. I think benches have an awful lot to play in these games and impact on players coming on. You're mentioning Alapati Luia there, who comes off the bench, and he's Samoan guy who's got plenty of impact, but a lot of them do. They're all class players. You can switch and move players. Jimmy Goppert's been playing 10, 12, 13.
Yeah.
So you can.
Do you think they're the real deal, or have they been slightly oversold, or like, are they genuine winners at a tournament?
I do, really do, because they're confident lads, you know, and it's amazing what confidence does. And it's a cliche that, oh, like a couple of wins and stuff like that, and you're highly confident, but they are, and they actually backed themselves. A couple of years ago, faltered a little bit, but they've been there or thereabouts, you know, and they're just knocking on the door. So it's just I do see Leinster coming out on top, actually do. But
really,
Yeah.
I'd be worried about this one, I have to say. Like, you look at Cipriani and Goppert, like, huge amount of experience between them. Cipriani gets a bit of a a bit of a bashing now and then, you know, for kind of outside of rugby stuff. But he's a serious, serious player on his day. And himself and Gopper, two playmakers there, two very good kickers.
Beale, another playmaker, really. Yeah. Can step in with first receiver easily.
They have so many options to change the game around with those guys.
It's game breakers everywhere. You know, and if when Cipriani signed when I was still there, everyone's like, oh, it's going to be a fight off between Jimmy and Danny. And it's, oh, well, Jimmy's going to do it. You know, he's so safe, he's solid, he's reliable, he kicks. And yes, Cipriani's made it his own, and Jimmy's had to move, and Jimmy's played centre, and Jimmy's played 13. And, you know,
it's worked that, really well for him.
Yeah, though. Absolutely. Absolutely. But you wouldn't have thought that at the start. You know, you would have said, oh, well, Cipriani might go 15 or something, you know. And
they've even got game breakers in the pack in terms of guys that can carry ball, like Nathan Hughes, and guys like that. You know?
Lansbury had an unbelievable Six Nations.
Yeah, and one or two of the younger props are pretty highly rated as well, you know. So
Jack McGrath against Marty Moore should be an interesting battle.
I always really liked Marty Moore, to be honest. I think he was.
Yeah.
I don't know if harsh done by is the word, but I think there's definitely a place for him in the. I mean, I don't know, it'd be very close. Would you pick him or John Ryan if he was playing in Ireland as your backup tight head, I think, at least.
See, Marty Moore is
Two championship winning teams, people forget. Two Six Nations winning teams, Marty Moore. Played in all those games.
But Marty Moore's journey makes a mockery of that argument that timing was an issue with Donegal Ryan. Because you remember when he signed for Wasps and he'd been negotiating with the IRFU, they said, oh, he'll never go. He said, right, I'm gone. And signed a deal, pre-contract with Wasps, which was binding. They came back and said, oh, hang on, we will give you more money. But the deal was done. Couldn't get out of his contract. And I was thinking, so if the IRFU decided, oh, hang on, Donegal Ryan, don't go to Rasmus, if they really wanted to keep him, they would have come back again. So that timing thing about, oh, this was done months ago, that's rubbish, as far as I'm concerned. Because that's the precedent right there.
Yeah, I can't understand that argument at all. I mean, look, there's... James might fill us in on a few of the dirty little secrets that go on with agents and negotiations here, but you just have to wonder what's going on sometimes.
Did you enjoy Wasps?
Yeah, had a great time. Yeah. Great bunch of lads. It's a great club, actually.
It does seem like you mentioned the European powerhouses. Like Wasps would be up there still, going back to Delalio and Howley and all that.
Absolutely. I know when Redden was there. Yeah. And sure.
Hendo years ago. Yeah,
but Daniel O'Connor,
I suppose when the new tournament was formed and it was seen as this kind of Anglo-French carve-up and poor old Ireland and all the rest of it, like Wasps on the back of that, just uprooting and moving to Coventry, of all places, were kind of, I suppose, put forward as this kind of soulless club, but, you know, not the case, really.
No, certainly not. I think it's a stroke of genius that's worked out.
Yeah.
They were losing money, hemorrhaging money. So your players weren't paid a couple of weeks or months. And then the Irish guy, Derek Richardson, came in. So he, you know, owned 123.ie and bought them out and completely revamped it. Like, taken over the Ricoh Arena now, and he's got a hotel there. There's a casino. There's everything going on there.
Yeah.
But yet, on the field then, he's invested and he's bought players. And they've gone up to an area that's a big city, you know, and there's not much there. You've got your Midlands teams of Leicester, Northampton and Worcester to a certain degree, but Coventry's a big place and they want success. The football team have been down. They've been down in League 2, I think they are, or League 1 even. And they're crying out for it. All of a sudden, Worcester doing well. Their capacity and of crowds have gone up to like something like 20,000 from 7 or 6, you know, to all of a sudden making money.
Mm.
So financially and as a business case, it's unbelievable, you know.
I was at the old ground a good few years ago, and I just remember thinking, like, it's almost in the back of a housing estate, and it was Wasp's traditional ground and all that. And I remember when the move was kind of mooted originally, there was a huge kind of kick up and a fuss about it, but I mean, it certainly has paid dividends for them. And you know, you'd imagine that Leinster, if they bring their A game with the experience that they have, Johnny Sexton control in the back line, they do have some very exciting players outside as well. I'd love to see Joey Carberry in full flight this weekend. Looks like he'll probably start at 15 with Rob Kearney being out. Jamie Heastip is a loss, but you do have Josh van der Vlaeyer in there. You've Dan Levy. You have
I presume Cronin will start if fit, but don't know yet what'll happen there. But yeah, I mean, Jesus, they've enough back rows anyway, that's for sure.
It's probably the toughest one of the four to call.
Yeah, exactly. The only reason I'm kind of going with Leinster is it's home. It's in the Aviva. And again, I'd be interested to see the numbers of travel with Wasps.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, we're looking forward to it. Quick shout for the other two games this weekend. Saracens at home to Glasgow. Any chance that Glasgow might actually spring us a prize here? Another former team of yours?
Yeah, could do. But Saris are too good.
Just too strong.
Just know how to win, you know, grind teams down. And play to their structure. Everyone knows how they play. Everyone knows exactly what they're doing off certain
they're
things.
So and good yet, at it, doesn't
they're
matter.
So exactly, and it's hard. You know, he catches it and he's going to box kick it off here, and they're going to play one phase in, and you know it's coming, and yet they still keep that scoreboard ticking over. All of a sudden, it's 9-0, 12-0, and you're chasing, and then it's open, and then they've game breakers too.
Yeah,
and mentally, as the tournament goes on, like, you know, if you're looking at maybe a potential semi-final, they're not a team that's fazed by going on the road. You know, they're made of the right stuff, in fairness to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last game of the weekend is Clermont Auvergne at home to Toulon. I think a lot of people expecting Clermont to get the job done in the Stade Marcel. Toulon on their day, as we know, but they're just not the force that they were. I don't think there's whatever they've just seemed to have gone off the boil a little bit in the last 12 months.
You'd think, on the form we've seen in the tournament, yeah, at home, Clermont definitely favourites, but
yeah.
A lot of good players on show on both teams.
Are you missing the rugby at all? Or?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. At the start, not too much. I didn't miss pre-season or anything like that.
Yeah.
But now the matches are on, you've seen it. Yeah, of course, you'd love to still be out there. But you have to look after yourself and take care of the body somewhere.
Are you keeping fit or are you doing much? Or
Yeah. Playing a little bit of ball still. So hanging on in there. Yeah, right. But yeah, got to keep fit. Oh my God, I'd be driven nuts just sitting down. So
absolutely. Well, look, it's been brilliant to have you in. We'll do it again soon, hopefully. And yeah, thanks for your time over the last while. Don't forget, you can listen to live coverage from Thomond Park, Munster against Toulouse, 5:45 kickoff in Limerick on RT Radio 1. Coverage and commentary from Michael Corcoran and Bernard Jackman there. Leinster against Wasps, obviously, is a little bit earlier on in the afternoon. But thanks to Wes, well, thanks to James and to Gary Moore, who produced today. The RT Rugby podcast will be back next week. We'll be looking back, hopefully, on 2 out of 2 for the Irish provinces this weekend.
The RT Rugby podcast.